soundtrack fans. You're listening to ScoreNotes.com, Composer Interviews.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to ScoreNotes.com. We're here today with composer Joel McNeely. Joel, how are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
Doing well, too. Thank you. Can we begin by asking you to update us with news about your current projects?
Sure. It's been a pretty busy year. I just finished the score to Cinderella 3, one of the Disney Toon Studios projects that I've been doing a lot of work with them. That was a lot of fun. And then before that, I did another Disney Toons movie, The Fox and the Hound 2. And before that, we did a little bit of work on the Tinkerbell movie, and so on and so forth. It's been a pretty busy year.
It sounds like it. Out of the scores that you've worked on, can we anticipate a soundtrack release from any of those that you've mentioned?
Well, that's up in the air right now. Certainly, I know that Fox and the Hound is coming out with a soundtrack album with some really great songs by various artists, Reba McEntire and some wonderful Nashville artists. There'll be two or three cuts from my score on that, on the Fox and the Hound record. We used a combination on that movie of some of the finest bluegrass players in the whole country, in the whole world, actually. These guys are heroes of mine for many years, and I was almost starstruck to get to work with them. We went to Nashville, and then we combined that with a larger orchestral texture that we did later on in Los Angeles.
When you're working on a soundtrack that contains both commercial music and orchestral score elements, how do you generally find a balance between the two?
I tend to think of them as separate elements, although, you know, on the Fox soundtrack, there was a lot of kind of country-based music, songs and whatnot, and I kind of fit in my score around that by using bluegrass and then tinging it, the orchestral elements, with, you know, some kind of fiddlers, kind of reels in the violin, so on and so forth. And it's been a while since I've done a movie that had, you know, a real kind of pop soundtrack. But I generally try and have it, to some extent, relate to what's going on with the song.
When it comes to the animated genre, do you have a preference between live action and animation, or do you kind of just embrace each on its own accord?
I think it's whatever I'm not doing at the moment is my preference. I've had a wonderful time working with Disney Toon Studios, and they've been very kind in hiring me to do a lot of their projects. I got into it initially because I was a little tired of doing, you know, I had young children, and I was a little tired of doing movies that, you know, my children couldn't see, whether they be for violence reasons or they were too adult. And these, you know, Return to Neverland came along, and I thought, man, this is perfect. They want big orchestral thematically based scores, which is what I love to do most, and it's something my children can really participate in when I'm working. They come in and they sit in my studio, and they listen to me write. They watch the movie as I'm watching it, and so it's been a real kind of cool blend of family and work. And, you know, just a couple weeks ago, doing Cinderella 3, I was in a big recording studio with a 80-something piece orchestra and conducting, and my 7-year-old daughter was sitting on the podium with me, and she'd come into the booth for playbacks, and, you know, I mean, Cinderella's right up her alley.
I bet.
And so, you know, it was just a really fun, you know, when you're considering, well, that's work, and a session is a very high-pressured environment, it's really great to be able to kind of diffuse that by having your kids there and participating in it. Really fun. So, you know, I've done 6 or 7 Disney Toons movies in a row now, and, you know, I'm ready to do some live action.
If we can move on for a moment and talk about your work with the Royal Scottish National Orchestra.
Yeah.
What's your experience with them? How satisfying a collaboration is it?
Well, they're a terrific orchestra. I have loved the work we've done together and the sessions we do together for this. Whereas Saraband thing that people may not know about those sessions, and it maybe is lifting up the curtain a little too much, because maybe you shouldn't know this, but these records are incredibly expensive to make, and so they have to be done very quickly. So an orchestra like that, who can sight read incredibly well, is very valuable. And when we come in, you know, it's not like we have a lot of rehearsal time. We read the piece down once or twice. I make balance comments, talk to them about dynamics and phrasing, and we record it. So frequently we'll do a whole record in a day.
Wow.
Day and a half at the most. So those days are fraught with sweat and tension of just trying to get all the music recorded, you know, because sometimes, you know, 70 minutes plus for a record, and you're trying to do that in a single day or in a day and a half, and it's just, you know, fighting this uphill battle of can we get it done? To answer your question, the Royal Scots, yes, they're very quick on their feet. They read very well. They have great stamina, and you know, I'm proud of the work we've done together.
Yeah, and hopefully that introduces, you know, the music of yesteryear to new soundtrack fans, or fans who are just basically swept up in the modern era of film music.
Yes, exactly.
And how important do you think that is for, you know, an average soundtrack fan to kind of be in touch with the works of the past?
Well, I think it's really important. You know, I think anybody that wants to have a comprehensive view of any art form needs to look at the entire art form. The music, film music of the last 5 years, you know, well, that's just the film music of the last 5 years, but if you look at the film music of the last 50 years, 70 years, you're going to have a much more informed view to have an opinion about something. And I firmly believe that, you know, some of the greatest film music of all times happened, you know, 50 years ago.
Sure.
So, I think it's really important to look back. I don't know how you can be informed about anything if you're a fan of movies or literature or artwork or music in general, classical music or jazz. It's really important to have a comprehensive overview of the whole thing.
You're right. You're absolutely right. And I think when folks start digging into the past a little bit, they'll see that there is kind of a grand sweeping type of orchestral music that existed back then. And it seems like we've lost a little bit of touch with that these days. Do you think that trend will reverse itself ultimately?
You know, I don't know. First of all, I agree with you. And I think it's a regrettable trend. But I do think that if you look back, one thing that you can pretty well validate is that film music has gone in cycles, but it seems to always come back to orchestrally based or thematically based music. It goes away for a while. You could see in the 70s, late 60s, early 70s, film music turned away from orchestral music and went to, you know, jazz-influenced scores, rock-influenced scores, R&B-influenced scores, you know, all of those things. And then John Williams came along and kind of almost single-handedly turned the tide back to orchestral scores. And that cycle lasted for a fairly long time. So to answer your question, I don't know, but I certainly hope so.
Moving on to a soundtrack of yours that continues to be a favorite among the Star Wars fans, Shadows of the Empire. Was this as unique a scoring assignment that you've taken on during your career?
Yeah, I suppose it was. You know, you seldom get asked to write music. I mean, at the time, it wasn't music for a video game. It was music for a book. I was asked to write the music for the book, Shadows of the Empire, which is what I did. They made the video game later.
Oh, that's interesting.
Oh yeah, it was a book that George Lucas had commissioned. Lucasfilm had hired an author to write this book, the story of Between the Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, and that was the book. So I read the book. I kind of boiled it down to these different events. They said, do anything you want. You know, write a piece of music. You can have the Royal Scottish National Orchestra and chorus. And they just said, you know, read the book and write a piece.
Yeah, I'm sure there was a lot of temptation there to really delve into the existing material.
Well, you know, yeah, I mean, that was actually something I didn't want to do. And I told them that. I said, you know, if I'm going to do this, we'll refer to the music of Star Wars as the kind of the pillars, you know, thematically, and then we'll go on to something else, to my music. And that was what they were requesting of me to do. I didn't want to do, you know, a poor man's imitation of John Williams. I could never come close to, you know, to the amazing level that he's brought to these projects. So I thought, this is really hallowed ground. But the project itself was a bit of a stretch. I had two movies that this was sandwiched in between, and I was not able to, when they asked me to do this and the dates came up, I said, actually, I can't do it. I can't make those dates because I've got these two movies and I'm going to be in London scoring this movie. I can't make it. So I sort of turned it down for a while.
Were you introduced to this project due to your past working relationship with Lucasfilm?
Yeah, it was an idea between one of the marketing executives at Lucasfilm and Robert Townsend. And they took it to George, and George liked the idea, so they went forward with it. But then the thing kind of got shelved when my schedule was completely booked. Then that changed, and there was about a two-week window where I had to write the thing. And, you know, I don't listen to that piece much, but when I do, you know, I sort of hear the fact that it was written in 2 weeks. In places, I'm just like, you know, wow, I really had to jam to get this thing out. So, you know, I suppose, to be brutally honest, I guess it's not really my shining hour.
Well, I think you'd find a lot of folks would disagree with that, because that soundtrack, for, you know, for the time in which it came out, and, you know, of course, the prequels came out thereafter, you know, it stands on its own.
Well, I appreciate that.
And, you know, connecting Shadows of the Empire to the rest of the Star Wars movies, what was your opinion of the music, the way the direction John Williams took it in the prequels?
Oh, I thought that was fantastic. You know, just, I mean, what can you say? It's just, wow. Brilliant. I had some friends who were working on the sessions. And, you know, the thing about John's music is he's the ultimate... I don't want to even say craftsman, because that diminishes the artist side of what he does. He's a consummate artist, but his craft is at a level where you almost have to be somebody who does it too to understand how good he really is. I was teaching a class at USC yesterday to their film scoring students about writing for brass, and I was telling them a story about the first time I conducted the Jaws re-recording. I was studying the music, preparing to conduct in Scotland, and I was looking at the scores and going, oh my God, this is such incredibly difficult music. How are we going to be able to record this in the time allotted? It's impossible. It's too hard. Like going and recording The Rite of Spring or something, you know, you look at the score and it's just like, oh my God, this is so incredibly difficult. So we went into the studio and we started playing these incredibly difficult cues, and they sounded amazing the first time through when they were sight reading. And I was like, this can't be. How could they possibly read this? And so I started really taking the scores apart, and I realized, you know, not only is this man a brilliant composer, but he has gotten the craft down to the level where everything he writes is so idiomatically precise for that instrument. He knows what's going to sound amazing, or what key to write in for that particular instrument, or what string crossings, what passage work. He pays attention to where the hand position on the violin, so they can play these incredibly hard-sounding runs, but they're all in one hand position. So the violinist can just rip through it and it sounds incredibly hard, but it's actually quite facile for them. And I realized he does that for all of the instruments. He understands them to a level where he's able to write things that are just perfect for that instrument, and he does it for the whole orchestra. And that's when I really, that kind of opened my eyes to how much I didn't know about writing for the orchestra. And I got really serious after that and kind of buckled down and took myself back to school a little bit and started studying, you know, classical scores and also studying just individual instruments again and trying to really gain a higher level of knowledge for each instrument.
It's mind-boggling when it's put into those terms, when you really break it down. And throw into the mix, you know, you're trying to convey emotions and the timing of what's happening in a film.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just tip my cap to all of you composers because, you know, the short amount of time in which these scores are turned around, it's quite remarkable when you look at it.
Yeah, it is. It's, you know, it's a lot of pressure, and over the years, you get better at it. I don't suffer as much as I used to. You know, the first score I wrote, I was up most of the night, and I was working 16-hour days. And, you know, you just get better at the craft, and it gets easier, it comes quicker, you become more certain of what you're writing, that it'll work or that it'll sound good for the orchestra. And so now, you know, I can do in 8 hours what used to take me 12 hours. So it's, you know, but it's a tough thing. Being a composer is not a simple craft.
Real quick, I just want to touch on your music for Virus.
Okay.
I love the Russian choir at the end. How fun was that for you to conjure up a piece like that?
It's a lot of fun. You know what they're singing?
No.
They're singing the names of my family and my orchestrator and my engineer backwards. Because I didn't know any Russian. I didn't have time to go about researching Russian. I was like the last thing I wrote, this end credit. And, you know, it was like the day before the first session or something. And I didn't have time to go looking for Russian text or something. So I just took, you know, my kids' names and Dave Sloniker, my orchestrator, and just spelled them backwards.
Now, scanning the horizon, are you trying to target your way into a live-action film, or are you keeping your options open?
Well, I'm working on a couple things. You know, yes, I am trying to kind of head back to live-action, although the animation still continues to be a passion. I've got the Tinkerbell movie, which is going to be a major franchise for Disney. They're going to make 4 Tinkerbell movies, the first one to come out in September 07. I've been working on it for a couple of years now in various stages. It was at one point something of a musical. It had 12 songs in it, 4 of which I had written and all of which I had produced. And it now has no songs in it. So they've completely taken a different direction. But I'm still working on it. We had a session in London in March to score some of the preliminary animation for use in, you know, their promotional purposes. We had a big orchestra with, you know, a really fun 8-minute sequence with Tinkerbell flying through, or the fairies flying through London. We called it the Fairy Olympics. Just flying all over London. It was really a fun piece of music. And so I'll start working on that in the spring. And then hand in hand with that, I've been asked to write a ballet to go along with Tinkerbell. So we're just in the beginnings of working out with the live action group. And nothing has really been finalized, so it's early to talk about it, but we're just kind of starting to toss around ideas about having a live action ballet.
Wow, so that sounds like there's some great opportunities on the horizon there, hopefully.
I hope so, yeah. And I'm doing a lot of concert music right now. I'll be conducting in Houston, the Houston Chamber Orchestra, in May, with some music that I've written. I'm trying to put together a recording, a CD of my concert music. I've been writing a lot of different kinds of chamber music and smaller orchestral pieces. So I'm actually trying to work out a, I have an idea of putting together a CD of chamber music of film composers. Because Bruce Broughton has written some wonderful chamber music, and John Williams has written some great chamber music, and Alex North, Bernard Herrmann have written great chamber music. And I thought it would make an interesting record for fans to hear what film composers do when they, you know, step out from behind the film.
Yeah, that would be an interesting take.
Yeah.
Speaking from the perspective of the fan, of course. Well, Joel, I do want to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to sit down with us. It was a very enjoyable discussion.
It's my pleasure.